Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Shop Macy's VIP sale, going on now. Use your coupon or Macy's card and take an extra 30% off the latest fall trends from designers that rarely go on sale. And save 15% off skincare, makeup, fragrances, and more. Plus, shop fall specials for even more great deals on top brands at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, September 30th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, I'm going to talk a little about The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power Season 2, and I will present some interviews with a few key contributors to the new season of the show. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com. And before I get any deeper into this episode, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone out there for sticking with us while I took a much needed week off. My wife and I visited Glacier National Park in Montana to do some hiking. It was a blast. I posted some photos on my Instagram and Threads accounts if you're interested in seeing those. And if anyone out there is considering taking a trip there, I highly recommend it. Okay, on with the show. Longtime listeners will know that I love Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy, and I also adored the first season of Prime Video's The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. I thought it managed to capture the spirit of J.R.R. Tolkien's writing while striking a good balance between the fresh and the familiar, and season two does more of the same, but on an even bigger scale. That is especially true in the penultimate episode of the season, which debuted last week. If you don't want to hear any spoilers for what happens in episode 7, stop listening until you've caught up. And if you're on the fence about the show or have heard negative buzz about it, let me just encourage you to give it a try, especially if you liked what Peter Jackson did with that original trilogy. So, spoiler zone now. With episode 7, which is called Doomed to Die, The Rings of Power has, in my view, vaulted into the conversation of the greatest battle episodes in the history of television. The episode features an event from Tolkien's lore called the Siege of Eregion, which is set in and around the Elvish city where the character Celebrimbor has been forging the Rings of Power under the dark influence of Sauron. The character Adar, his army of orcs, begins to attack the city, and what plays out is among the most gigantic and impressive feats of television production that I've literally ever seen. As you'll hear from some of the folks who worked on it, the episode even eclipses the biggest battle episodes from HBO's Game of Thrones. I had the chance to speak with three of the people who brought this season to life, and naturally, a lot of my questions were about the most recent episode of the show, but we also touch on a few other elements throughout the season as well. First up, I spoke with Vic Armstrong, who has served as the second unit director on both seasons of the show so far. Armstrong is also a stunt coordinator and former stuntman himself. The Guinness Book of World Records actually has him listed as the world's most prolific stuntman. Famously, he doubled Harrison Ford in the first three Indiana Jones movies. He was the guy who was dragged under the truck during that big chase scene, Raiders of the Lost Ark, among many other things. He has doubled for multiple James Bond actors. He doubled for Christopher Reeve in the first two Superman movies. He worked on films like Flash Gordon, the original Total Recall, Starship Troopers, Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds, many, many, many more. It was a real treat to talk to him about his work on Rings of Power Season 2. So here is my chat with Vic Armstrong.
Hi, Ben.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So Episode 7 of Rings of Power Season 2 is this incredible achievement. And from the outside looking in, that seems like it would be one of the biggest challenges of your career. Did it feel that way to you?
Not the biggest challenge of my career. I've done some big stuff, but it was challenging in as much as you had orcs that had incredible makeup on, hours and hours, 4.5, 5 hours of makeup. So you're limited in the amount of orcs you can get at any one time. And then, of course, the massive horses, finding locations to shoot them in the winter in England, because they do a terrible lot of damage, you know, horses thundering everywhere. And the fact you're shooting it almost in a live location, which was a quagmire on the edge of Windsor Great Park. They're challenges, but the challenge in itself is just making it all come together. You know, I've done big charges over the years, like the Four Feathers. I had nearly 2,000 people and horses in that. And going back to the early 70s when I was a young man, Young Winston. We had 300 horses, you know, charging into On Demand with Young Winston and such. I'm used to those type of things, but it's the logistics that bite you in the bum.
Yeah.
And I said about the orcs, you know, they have four and a half hours makeup every day, each orc, and then you're limited how long, when you do get the one to say how long they can work for, because they've got contacts in and all this sort of stuff. And then you have to recycle them and get more orcs in, talk them through the sequence you're shooting. So you're always limited to the amount of orcs you have, 20, 30, whatever it is. You know, if you had 100 odd orcs, you'd probably have about 700 odd people backing up to make those orcs work. You know, it's incredible. They're so labor intensive. So all those sort of things come into it, make it challenging. But then you want to make the whole show exciting, you know. I'm a film man as against a TV man, and I've never considered this to be TV. When we did the first series in New Zealand, it was always 8-hour long films that would be put together. And I look at it as a film, because my feelings nowadays is that most people have a huge TV screen in their house. Gone are the days, little 22-inch screen with speakers built into it, a television screen. Most people have a great big screen. A lot of people have projectors. A lot of people have a different sound system, even with the sound bars underneath. And if you look at it, their relationship to the screen is just probably the same as if you're sitting in the center seat in Leicester Square looking at the screen. Your actual film, amount of film that's going in your eyes and the sound is just probably the same. So therefore the quality is the same. You're looking at it with, you know, some are 4K projectors. So we try and make all that as realistic as possible, and then give it the big screen feel. You know, I did a lot of work at Windsor Park. It's very close to my house as well, which is wonderful. We ride in there on our own anyway, normally. But I found a wonderful place on the edge of Windsor Park, another estate that let us loose with all the horses. And we literally did a charge, about 3 charges, and then it's okay, move everything over to another section of ground, because we just plowed it up. It was great fun. But I think the payoff is the sound of those thundering hooves and seeing those horses and snot nostrils and also doing a charge. It's also about, you know, I've done hundreds of charges. There have been thousands of charges done over the years. So my point of view is that the way we shoot it is going to make it the difference. So I've tried to get different camera angles in there. I've got little cameras on, tiny little remote cameras on wheels rushing along. The drone, the usual drone, although we're now getting limited actually with drones. They try and stop you flying over the top of things, of horses, which seems strange. Just because it's a film set, they fly over people everywhere. But oh, it's a film set. It's you can't have a... Anyway, so we got around that. We cheated a little bit. And then I also had a 360 camera, which somebody in the middle of the bat near the horses was riding at, holding this 360 camera. So you see the horses either side of the lens and all that sort of stuff. Trying to make it as interesting, as varied as possible. And then nothing beats the sound of that mob of horses charging to you and then they skid to halt. It's quite exciting.
I was wondering, on a practical level, if you talked to any of the people who worked on some of the big battle scenes in Game of Thrones or even like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings movies, to sort of pick their brains and maybe learn from any mistakes they might have made constructing a gigantic battle sequence like that?
No. No. I everybody thinks they can do it better themselves, and I've made a lot of mistakes over the years and I've learned from those. So I think your own experience is the best one to go with. Your gut feeling, you know, you walk on, you know when something's not wrong, right, and you know when a way of doing things, and you know, you know, you can't put a camera there, it's not going to happen, it's going to be, you know. So your gut feeling tells you that. Now, I wouldn't trust other people, because I think I always feel I know better than they do, egotistical as it may sound. But, you know, I think your own, that makes it your own as well. You're not tempted to steal any ideas. If they do come through, it's subconscious, but I never want to do that.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to shoot that particular episode? Because as I was watching it, I was just like, my God, this is a gargantuan undertaking.
Yeah, that was tough. And it was night for night in a real quagmire in the edge of Windsor Great Park, where all the trees have been ripped out. It was just a marsh. And so it was very, very slow shooting in that respect. I forget how many weeks it was, but days roll into nights and nights roll into days. You just, you turn into a robot. You get up, you go to work, you come home, you go to sleep. And so it was several weeks, you know. It's a big thing, and it's not the sort of thing you can rush anyway. You know, you've got your things, and you can't say that'll do. It's got to be right, because before you move on to the next one, you know.
Right. I know that a ton of planning and communication has to go into something like that to make sure that everybody's safe. But is every single beat written into the script, or do you have some room to add your own spin on things as you're filming?
It's not every single beat is not written to the script, but Patrick McKay and JD Payne are great compatriots, great buddies and team players. So we had lots of production meetings where I would pitch what I would like to do, where this should be, because you have to have most of these things planned, because they all have to have knock-on effects from props and special effects and all sorts of things and costumes. So everything has to be planned in that respect, but not necessarily in the script. The script will tell you the value that they want to get on screen and the emotion they want to get through. And then it's up to me to suggest what I could do to make that, carry that along and make it look interesting. So throw this into it, you know, the ladders coming off the buildings, or the horses getting stuck in the mud, you know, whether you see them, whether they're actually flailing around in a quicksand, and all those little things. And the various fights are discussed. We knew we had the conflict between Robert Elrond and you know, so-and-so. So you, all those are in there. And that, so they're separate off, and they're rehearsed on their own, and then you plug them into a certain place in the battle. So it is choreographed, but it's still organic, in as much as we've all had an input into it and given our own bits, which is why, as you asked earlier, I wouldn't want to look at the Game of Thrones or anything else, because that's their bag. Our bag is this story, and you're so involved with that story, you want to get all your own little pieces into that. And then when you do this, like if I suggest something, I say to myself, don't be stupid and suggest something that A, you can't do, or it's going to take too long to do, or it's going to cost too much to do, because then you have to think of cost as well. So you get it as big as you can without blowing it all up sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, there are a few moments from that episode that I don't think I've ever seen before in a big scene like this. Especially there's this bit where the elves are hurling bags of like flammable material and then shooting them with flaming arrows, yeah. Which was just a really cool idea, because the remains like scatter down on these orcs and it catches them on fire and all that stuff. Can you talk through like what went into executing that idea?
Yeah, I love that. I thought it was great. And when you see those flames coming down on the ground, it's great, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's like napalm coming down. And in my mind, when we're doing it, we're in Vietnam. We're doing a Vietnam sequence, you know, and that's exactly what we set out to do. But it was a great idea, and we pushed on with it. And the goatskin bags filled with fuel, and you know, you stretch license a little bit, cinematic license, but. You know, they're great shots, those guys, with the flaming arrow. But hey, you buy it. You see it, you buy it, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of time goes into that, because you have to do your whip pans and you do the explosion, and then you get cut. Obviously, you can't have people beneath that explosion, because that's really, really burning stuff that is nasty. So then you do the down shots, and you have people placed in certain areas, and you pop a bang above them that's a control bang. You know exactly where it's going to be, as against one that's flying through the air. And then they're all stunties. They want to keep their collars turned up so they don't go down your neck and stuff like that. So that was really good. And that's really organic, instantaneous, reactionary stuff, you know. And I hadn't seen that before. And I thought, what a great idea, you know. It'd be boiling tar over the edge of the thing. It's all right if you're on a ladder. Otherwise, it's a waste of time tipping that over there. So we went to the sort of Mark II of flaming tar.
Yeah, that's great. Were there any smaller beats like that stood out to you as being either really fun to achieve in that sequence, or maybe even really difficult to pull off or anything like that?
The hard thing was smashing the wall in purely logistics, smashing the wall, because every time you did a take, you had to have it all rebuilt. And then schedule-wise, we had to have the broken wall at the end of that set that was there, so we had to keep that out of shot all the time and come around and get certain angles to be able to see the rams hitting the wall and pulling out and telling the story of what they're actually doing. They're going in and pulling the stuff out. That was tricky, because the payoff is okay, but it's not a big Rambo-esque explosion with Sly running towards you and leaping and the bang going off. But it's a story point that has to be told because it has a payoff further down the line. So those things are tough to do. We did some nice stuff, did a really gory thing where the woman earlier in the daytime before they attack, she gets thrown off the castle wall and the orcs kill her. And Charlotte, my director friend who directed it as well, you know, we go back to New Zealand. I mean, she's a great buddy of mine, fantastic director. So we're good counterparts. And she said, give me something really gruesome, Vic. So I said, oh, okay. So I had her thrown off the wall. And you see her go down and hit the ground. It's a really good shot. And you see this orc chopper. And then he holds up a whole shoulder and arm and starts drinking the blood. But they deemed it a bit too gory, which I can't understand why, of course. but all those sort of things get in there. Then they get taken out. But that's a sort of mindset you've got when you're in there. People look at you. If they're sitting at the next table, we're in a cafe talking about what I was suggesting, you know, yeah, have a fall off the wall and a hacker, and then the whole shoulder will come off, still with the dress on the sleeve and things, and the blood's coming out and he's drinking. People will think you're completely bonkers, you know. but that's the mind of us people that do these sort of things. Then you still try and keep it realistic.
You
know?
Yeah.
So there you go. It's a trade-off.
It's a really astounding achievement. I would love to ask you just a couple of really quick questions about a few other projects that you've worked on. I imagine everyone that you've ever spoken to has asked you about your experience on Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I will recommend that people read your book to get the full story on that. I'm not going to ask you about that. I was hoping, though, that you might be able to tell me about, I read that you directed the opening sequence of Terminator 2. What do you remember from that experience?
Yep. Terminator 2. I did the opening sequence of young Indiana Jones. We took some footage from Old Gringo, re-edited it with George Lucas. I went down to Spain and shot that, flew straight back to LA. And then they wanted me, I had 4 days to do the opening sequence of the Future Wars. And the car comes in and crashes the foot on the skull and all that sort of stuff. And I had 4 nights down in Fontana in California to do that. And that was tough. And actually, I had a row with Jim Cameron on that, because I went with him, looked at it all, and really compressed for time. And he wanted stuff, all this battle that we had, fighting and the shooting and the crashing and the car crashing, flips over and the crashing the skull. But he also wanted background footage for the Future Wars you're going to use later in the movie, but that would all be left to right. And we worked it out. We wouldn't have time to shoot it all because the massive organization, each one take with all the people. So I said, well, let's shoot it all at the same time. We'd even have Steadicams in there, because in the battle, it's so futuristic. A guy running out of the Steadicam looks like he's got a futuristic gun, you know. So I said, I'd shoot them both together, shoot the left to rights in the battle, and then I'd shoot the right to left during this way, you know, while we're outside it. So we went, oh, that sounds good. Anyway, first night shooting, I did it, and he came back and he said, no, and he's furious. He came down and said, you idiot, you've done it all wrong. They're all going the wrong direction. I said, no, Jim, we decided we'd shoot in the battle, we'd shoot left to right and right to left all at the same time, and you could flop it and all that. He went, oh, you're dead right, we did, didn't we? And he was sweet as nut, and off he went. But it was one of those moments, thinking, oh my goodness, what's happened here? You know, big fight. But that's one I'm very proud of. It's an iconic sequence, iconic movie, one of my favorite movies, along with the indies and such, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, I think I probably have time for one last question with you, and bringing it back to Rings of Power as we wrap it up. Were there any smaller fight scenes or action moments from earlier in the season that stood out to you in any way?
Yes. I'm trying to think. Going through Eregion, there's somebody gets mugged. Oh, they're coming through and rampaging and throwing all the furniture away and wrecking the place. They were fun to do because they were also like almost modern day war movies. You know, it was almost like All Quiet on the Western Front when we were doing some of that. And actually, Charlotte Branstrom and I referred to All Quiet on the Western Front a lot during the whole shooting of this, because I think. The approach to it is very similar. We did lots of little things in there, in streets and throwing furniture and people getting stabbed and and mugged, if you like, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's a big contrast from the great big huge battle scenes into street warfare, if you like, you know, hand-to-hand battles. And I think they were all original as well, personally. I think it's good.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you've done so much great work on so many movies and shows that have meant a great deal to me. So I just want to say thank you for that. And thank you for giving me the time today. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure. My pleasure. Take it easy, Ben. All the best.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Are you a victim of the timeshare trap and think there's no way out? I'm Chuck McDowell, founder of Wesley Financial Group, and I'm here to tell you that there is a way out. I will send you a timeshare exit information kit absolutely free, explaining how the timeshare industry works and your options for cancellation.
Get the facts. For your free timeshare exit info kit, go to iCancelTimeshare.com. That's iCancelTimeshare.com. iCancelTimeshare.com.
Next, I spoke with Barry and Sarah Gower, a husband and wife team who worked on the prosthetics in this season. Sarah is the prosthetics department head, and Barry is the prosthetic designer. They have had their own company called BGFX based in London that's been operating for nearly 15 years now, and they came on board Rings of Power for season 2. Sarah used to work in visual effects on movies like Hot Fuzz and X-Men First Class before transitioning over into prosthetics. And Barry has worked on things like 28 Days Later, The Dark Knight, the Harry Potter movies, and a lot more. They both actually worked on the prosthetics for Game of Thrones, so they're definitely familiar with the requirements of tackling a highly beloved fantasy series on a truly epic scale. Here is my conversation with Barry and Sarah Gower. So Sarah, I would like to start with you. I was looking back over your work, and you spent a big chunk of your career working in visual effects and then switched over to prosthetics 10 years ago and have done that ever since. What was that transition like for you?
It was a bit weird at first. Only in that about 10 years ago, the two departments didn't really get on, I think, because prosthetics felt visual effects were taking their work away. So for us to get together, it was a bit of a, ooh, you know, a bit of a no-no. I did feel like a bit of an outsider at first, and it's a very different world coming from a visual effects facility where everyone sat at computers, and it's a very different environment to then coming to a workshop where there's lots of mess and rubber, and it's like an art college. It's a very different environment, but obviously both things are equally creative, and so it's very easy to transition from one to the other. And obviously now these days the two departments work very closely together, so we collaborate a lot of the time now with visual effects. So it's very different to when we actually met. But it certainly helps. And I think it is, you know, we're just fans of good creative work. So we see good visual effects, we're like, wow, good, you know, well, good.
Good prosthetics.
Good prosthetics. Yeah. It's like, we just get excited, basically.
Yeah. So Barry, is there a creature or a race or a character that you enjoyed designing the prosthetics for more than the others in Rings of Power season 2?
Yes. I mean, it was the grand scale of it was immense. There was so many different things to sort of design season 2. I think one of the most enjoyable aspects for us were again working very closely with Jason Smith, visual effects supervisor, and creating the Barrowites characters was a really happy marriage between the two, because originally I think they were intended to be mostly visual effects. There wasn't any practical element at all. And Jason, it's very similar to Sarah's background, really. I mean, Jason's he's a visual effects supervisor, but he used to do practical prosthetic makeups on himself back in the 80s. He was showing me photos of himself as Darkness out of Legend and Meg Mucklebone of all these characters, but so he's a big advocate of practical effects. So he actually said to us, can you bring something to the table? I think really it would be really good to have a physical presence on set every night with characters wearing practical makeups. And he said, I'm not going to lie, that the end result will be predominantly visual effects, definitely from the waist down. And there will be visual effects sort of layers, which will probably be imposing over the top of your makeups. But he said to have the foundation and the structure there in the first place would be incredible. So we worked very closely with Jason, with the design, the concepting of these characters. And then I think we had five characters that we had in full head and shoulder prosthetics, chests, arms. They're in full costume every night. They're on these incredible rigs. I can't remember what they were called now. There's something, I think the technical term was seesaw. And I think these guys were on these sort of rigs floating up and down in front of camera. And they almost looked like CGI, the way they were moving. And we shot a lot of stuff there and then in this woodland setting. And then we shot some green screen footage. And then that's what Jason and his team took in post-production, kind of knitted it all together. So
wow.
It was really exciting experience.
That's awesome. What about you, Sarah? Was there one that was a personal favorite of yours to work on?
I thought you were going to say Gloog, actually. I think, which was Adar's henchman. That's Adar's what we, henchman. Yeah. Which was performed by Robert Strange. Just because I think with that character, because he's got a lot of lines, but also he can look sympathetic, his emotions really come through on that makeup, so he can look nasty and angry, and then also he can completely flip that, and I think all his personality comes through in that makeup. And yeah, I think he's definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, you really feel that in episode 7 of season 2, where in that big battle sequence where he's kind of like hemming and hawing and like, I don't know if I'm on board with this and all of that. And that stuff really, really comes through very well in that character. But I wanted to talk to you both about that scene, that episode, because it's just tremendous and kind of overwhelming to watch. But both of you worked on Game of Thrones, and there are some, you know, similarities between a fantasy show like that and Rings of Power, especially when it comes to a massive battle scene like that. So I was wondering if there were any particular lessons that you learned from your experience on Game of Thrones that informed your work on episode 7 of Rings of Power season 2.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think nothing could have prepared us for the scale of Rings of Power. Everything we've worked on in the past kind of has just paled into, you know.
Yeah, I'd say weirdly on Game of Thrones, for each season, the battles got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then come to this season of Rings of Power, this is probably the biggest thing that we've ever done. And now it puts those other battles, like, does not compare to what we had to do. It was certainly prosthetic wise, because what everyone has to remember, the elves have ears, so they need applying. Obviously, all the orc makeups, and they take 2 people to apply for 2.5 hours each. They all have bespoke lenses and bespoke teeth. We had about 70 masked orcs as well, so for pullovers that were further in the background. Then we had heroes, so just the sheer scale is something which was definitely a challenge. But I think all those years on Thrones, that definitely prepared us, I think, just sort of go, but this is definitely the biggest one.
It's interesting because that huge battle sequence as well is like, you know, you have all these characters that are in the same sequence and they're all fighting together, but we shot them on separate filming units as well, because obviously when you're shooting the dwarves, they're at a different scale to the elves and the orcs. So on any given day, we might have split teams, which we were shooting all the orcs down, you know, down in, it was like West London in a forest. And then we would have another team who would be at the studio shooting all the dwarf sort of content. And And it was just spreading ourselves of a huge team. In the end, we had just over 100 people on the team, prosthetic artists, which were just split across these three filming units. And I mean, I think Game of Thrones, definitely as we were heading towards the end of the franchise, it's like we had huge crowd days where we might have 60 to 80 prosthetic artists in a huge crowd tent doing loads and loads of these white makeups on the stunt guys or the zombies. But it was just such a mix of characters, especially for the battle, that we're quite used to working on a show and continuing the build of all our stuff throughout the shoot. We'd have little guest appearances throughout the shoot with a couple of characters here, a couple of characters here, and we'd usually end on this climax of a massive battle like Hard Home or something like Frozen Lake or something on Game of Thrones. Whereas we just hit the ground running with season two of Rings of Power. And our first sequence, the first week, was the opening shot of the show with the coronation of Sauron being stabbed with the crown. And we had 60 orc makeups on every day. Like, these were all hero makeups with lenses and teeth. And they were bringing them all front and central, and they were all growling and drooling and doing whatever. And we've never worked on anything that scale before. I mean, it was... we kept saying it's unprecedented, really. I think the size and the challenge that we've had this year, but that the battle alone, it kind of, I mean, I know it's over 2 to 3 episodes, but I mean, the whole battle sequence was weeks and weeks and weeks of filming.
Days,
nights, dawn, dusk. So it was what an amazing experience there.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of get the sense from the two of you that, like, you could always use, even on a really expensive show like this, that you could always use more time and money and resources and stuff for something as huge as this. But when you read that on the page, that, okay, they're planning this gigantic thing that's going to be bigger than we've ever done before, do you guys have the ability to bring in extra people for your team to help you just accomplish what you need to get done on the day for something like that, compared to just maybe an episode where there isn't something that gigantic?
Yeah, I mean, we're quite fortunate in that we have a lot of highly talented prosthetic artists that tend to work with us and return to us for the big shows. But not just in the UK, for this season, we even brought over extra prosthetic artists from Canada, Spain,
Italy, Germany,
just because I think trying to get that volume of prosthetic artists is actually quite a challenge, especially when other projects are also filming. So we were quite fortunate in that we managed to pull together a really, well, good team. But there are a lot of people that we've worked with for sort of 10, 20 years. We always call it this like a prosthetic party, and everyone gets really excited because equally prosthetic artists love to make monsters. So you can imagine 3-4 o'clock in the morning, we're all stood there, artists, you know, applying these orc makeups, just having a great time, loving life.
Sleep deprived,
but loving it, you know. It's like everyone gets a real buzz from it.
That's awesome. So how do you go about putting your own spin on something like an orc that has such a distinctive look in people's minds thanks to the Peter Jackson movies? Are you guys looking at those films and trying to mimic the overall vibe of it, but still being able to just kind of put your own spin here and there? Or what's the process like for you on that front?
That's exactly the case. I mean, we're both huge fans of the trilogy of films. I'm a big fan of like the 70s animated movie as well. It's like the orcs in that I used to find horrific when I was a kid. But we looked at a lot of Alan Lee and John Howe illustrations as well from the original trilogy. We obviously needed some kind of continuity from season one, which we didn't work on, to follow into season two. But there were discussions quite early on that, again, speaking with Jason Smith in visual effects, they were basically after being able to have populate a screen with X amount of orcs, but have the ability to maybe bring some of those front and central as well. So we could have some which were emoting, and maybe they had some dialogue, or they were grunting, or we saw a lot of facial movement. So we designed the makeups quite similar to the trilogy of films, actually, where we sculpted X amount of orc characters over different sized heads, male and female. And we split all the prosthetics up, so we'd have separate foreheads, separate cheeks, separate whatever. And I mean, a whole makeup probably comprised of maybe about 6-7 appliances. But we were able to take a forehead from one, cheeks from another, chin from another, and start swapping them around. And we would put them all together on a head format, and then artwork them all together, pre-artwork them. So we created a character with different pieces. And we were able to just generate a plethora of different looking orcs. But we used basically techniques used on the trilogy of films, the materials. We used foam latex because it's a lot more malleable, it's a lot more stretchy, and it's a lot more forgiving when you start mix and matching appliances.
I was also going to say, we also took into consideration the people's faces, the performers' faces that we're actually going to apply the makeups on, because also you already want there to be some character behind the makeup, so it helps. So we would go through sort of all the headshots of different people, and we'd flick through and we'd highlight which ones that we were like, oh, they've got a good face, they've got a great face, just to try and accentuate the features that those people already had.
It was fascinating.
Fascinating, yeah.
That's so cool. Well, I think I'm out of time with you. I feel like I could talk to you guys all day about this stuff. It's so interesting. But thank you again for the time, and congrats on the show. It's such an incredible accomplishment.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Ben. Good to talk to you.
The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power Season 2 finale will be available to stream on Prime Video at 3 a.m. Eastern Time this Thursday. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. We have a packed week for you guys here. We have a lot of interviews and stuff coming up, so stay tuned for that. Lots to look forward to there. I'm not going to tease anything specific, but trust me, you'll want to hear these. You can find more about The Rings of Power at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.